Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
I am Zach Goody, and I am the new lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Yes, we're doing a back patio taping. If you hear jets, birds, crows, dogs, multiple dogs, it's because we're out in the elements. I actually love taping like this because it feels a little less like precious, you know. You can kind of,
this is a nice little spot,
hang back here. It's our little jungle. So obviously, you know, much of the music listening world is familiar with Smash Mouth in some way. You know, All Star is pumped into our ears whether we want it or not.
Yep.
Half the time, but I think people forget how just really cool some of their tracks were, especially in the late 90s. Astro Lounge, I wore that out when I was probably about 14, you know?
Yeah.
And re-listening to some of those songs, it reminded me about how much I loved bands that I think are criminally underrated, like Cake.
Sure.
Is another band that can kind of be sequestered into like, oh yeah, they're sort of like joke rock.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, uh-huh, this sort of not fully critically serious pop rock and roll songwriting. And it's like, well, yeah, but there's a reason why it did so well.
I think what happens with a lot of those bands is just they have such big hits that people don't really dig, except the actual fans who had the album. The general radio listening public didn't dig deeper. And you know, you get,
yeah,
you know, having a smash hit is obviously a blessing and a curse, you know, because the success of All Star and I'm a Believer and the whole Shrek thing is just, you know, it just pays dividends, you know, for 30 years because people know those songs. They always will know the songs. They come to the shows and they sing them. But also, you're seen as a one hit wonder, even though there's, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 hits. But there's a lot of stereotyping. I think a lot of bands get that have that huge hit. And it's, you know, once you've reached the pinnacle, it's hard to top that. So you're always being compared to that one huge hit or two huge hits, you know.
Well, it's always crazy reading the histories of these bands and seeing the major labels drop a band like Smash Mouth immediately after they don't have like a platinum record.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this record only did, you know, gold status, goodbye.
Yeah.
Like they would kill for that now, you know?
Seriously. Yeah. Seriously. I know we just, All Star actually just went triple platinum. And they sent me the plaque in the mail, even though I didn't sing on it. But, it was pretty cool because I guess at the time that song was actually never released as a single.
Mm.
So the album sold like 10 million copies, but the single was never actually platinum. So because of streaming now and all that stuff, it's now officially triple platinum. So it's kind of cool, like what, 20 something years later.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the
shape of an L on her forehead.
So the band obviously formed almost 30 years ago now, '94, around San Jose. How much of the history did you have to kind of steep yourself in before you dove into this kind of crazy role as the frontman of this band that people have an emotional, historical connection to? And you guys are playing 20,000 people crowds in South America, all over the world, and all of a sudden you're put into this spotlight. What was that like?
Well, the last Mexican show actually was like 75,000 people. It was pretty crazy. It was this festival with Killers and Billie Eilish and 21 Pilots, and it's nuts, yeah. I learned a lot. I mean, I got kind of a crash course in their history. I wasn't real hip. I was in a band in the 90s around the same time as those guys, a little earlier actually, called Ghoulspoon. That was my band in San Diego. So I kind of had a parallel story as theirs. I was in the SoCal music scene, similar kind of band. We were more heavy, you know, but it was like, you know, the same way they had punk and ska and reggae and different elements, we also had different elements. So I kind of knew, we even played in San Jose and like knew who they were. So the difference was they had Walking on the Sun, which, you know, became a number one smash. And I guess they were buddies with Carson Daly because he's from San Jose as well. So when he got the job at K-Rock, he played that song and then it became number one and they got the record deal and all kinds of stuff. Because what I learned was that album, the first album, Fresh Humane, they made on their own with Eric Valentine without a label. So when they got signed, they had a finished, done album with a number one song on it. Done. So usually it takes,
that'll work.
Yeah, usually it takes months and months and months to develop and record an album. They had a done album in the can by Eric Valentine, who did Third Eye Blind same year. And so they were like, they hit the ground running, you know. So it's really an incredible story. Like, I wasn't there for it, but I've heard through the manager tell the stories about how they had the bidding war, and like, I guess Paul, the bass player, thought that they were done because he was a little bit older, and they had put the album out, nothing happened, they had the hit. And he went like on a surfing trip to Big Sur, and like kind of, you know, back then no cell phones. And he came back, and they're trying to get a hold of him. Like, hey, we got a record deal for like, you know, millions of dollars. And it was this crazy story. So, yeah, man, they hit it out of the park on that one. And then they avoided the one hit wonder curse by having the second album be even bigger with All Star and I'm a Believer. So that's really what cemented it, you know.
Toss around a bonfire, just singing and clapping, man. What the hell happened? There's someone spellbound, some were hellbound, some they fell down, some got back up and fought back against the meltdown. And their kids were hippie chicks, all hypocrites, because fashion is smash on the true meaning of it. So don't delay, act now, supplies are running out, allowing you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive.
Yeah, I mean, now that I look at it, that cover of Fush Yu Meng, I had that on cassette.
Yeah, sounds right.
And I would put it in my 6-CD changer boombox. And, you know, when you're, what, 11, 12? Like, these are the first albums you buy on your own.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, I'm a little older, so the first albums I bought on my own were, you know, different. But
I literally had as part of my, you know, first record collection,
sure,
like the Beatles, REM, you know, Alanis Morissette or something, stuff like that, Smash Mouth.
Sure.
And it was like part of your listening repertoire. And I think that I could hear the 60s kind of psychedelic rock and roll happening. But there's that organ that kind of is a through line through a lot of it.
Mike Clouster.
Yeah, man. It just feels like, you know, the Animals.
Sure. Zombies. For sure. They were one of the first bands, I don't know if the first, but maybe the most prominent, to sort of embrace that whole kind of retro, exotica, lounge kind of thing that was happening, which I was also super into since maybe 91 when I discovered those research books and started collecting, like, you know, Martin Denny albums and all that stuff. Esquivel and all that stuff was very, so they kind of took that to the mainstream. And there were other bands doing it, I guess. There was, you know, some other like kind of one hit wonders that did it, but they were, I guess Beck would have been a good example, of that kind of like pastiche of producing, that kind of 60s throwback samples and things. So yeah, sonically those first couple albums are just beautiful. Like I went back and listened to them and I didn't know how good they were, you know, and how great the songwriting was too.
But also, you know, during that time, obviously a lot of people were listening to ska music, punk music, and then those certain bands like No Doubt, Green sure. Day were sort of transitioning into a more mainstream yeah. sound. You could say Smash Mouth did the same thing, yeah. right? A lot of those records, like the first song was at Flow, I think, of that. Yeah. It's like, that's just a straight up ska punk song.
Well, their first hit was called Nervous in the Alley, yeah. and that was like a local hit in San Jose. And that's on the first album, and it's just straight up just like fast punk ska. Yeah. It's great. It's, it sounds like an Offspring song or something, and it's a banger, you know?
She's 15 and she's leaving home, living on the streets where she don't feel alone. Daddy's always gone and mommy's on the sauce, living in a mansion, it's easy to get lost. She's going to a place where they understand. Baby, on the way
we play it live now. And yeah, there was a couple songs like that in the first few albums, and then they sort of, I guess, you know, wrote some stuff that it took off, so it, you know, which is good because the punk ska thing kind of faded a bit, I'd say, from the mainstream. Like, it was huge for a minute, and then kind of, now it's back, of course, like everything.
But. Yeah. Like, do people who have been listening to Smash Mouth from the beginning still view the band as, like, a ska-adjacent band?
I don't know. I mean, I do see comments, people, like, you know, people that request the old songs and want to hear the punk ska stuff, you know, and there's, whoa, that was someone just skated out. I feel like definitely people want to hear the old stuff. Because I the story that you just told about your, you know, having that album is, I've heard that story, you know, 100, every single show. People are yeah. like, I have my first album, my first concert, my, you know, it's generational too. Because you have to realize that when Shrek came out, there's babies being born now whose parents weren't born when Shrek came out. How's that?
Let's move on. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Then the Morning Comes is one of my favorite songs from that era.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's
it's
probably
just
my favorite song of theirs.
A banger, and it's great lyrics. It's, you know, there's obviously this sort of element of the rap rock aesthetic, but like Bare Naked Ladies yeah. vibe, like where you're just spitting a lot of rhymes. And yeah, you have to keep up.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. it was definitely a challenge to learn all those. I mean, I had to learn about 30 songs. And so I just learned them because I'm a singer and I've done, you know, that's what I do. But it was definitely challenging. I mean, Greg wrote some of the wordplay he uses is incredible. And he's also a songwriter who has a lot of third and fourth verses, which you don't see in a lot of bands. So it's like you think you're done and then there's a fourth verse, you know. He's a very complete songwriter. So all these songs tell these stories. And they resolve, you know, it's not just like ambiguous. It's like if you're writing a song about, you know, a car, it's like it tells the whole story from start to finish and wraps it up. It's like very well written. So it was definitely a challenge to learn these songs, but now it's kind of in my psyche.
And I think there's an interesting irony to some of the covers that the band became known for.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm a believer, but, you know, I just rediscovered that Why Can't We Be Friends, yeah. the War cover. And these are like bands, in a way, similar to Smash Mouth in that they, like, do people view the Monkees as a serious band? But they have great songs.
Well, that's because Neil Diamond wrote them.
Right. But it's like these bands that can kind of like be cast aside as like, oh, War did, you know, Lowrider. It's like kind
yeah.
of just like a throwaway
kind
trivial
of a
song.
Yeah.
Except that these songs are being played 40, 50 years later all the time.
But yeah, the covers, Why Can't We Be Friends, is still huge. I'm a Believer, obviously, is huge. The first song that we released with me on vocals last year is Never Gonna Give You Up. So that's sort of like kind of moved into the permanent set list. Like, everyone knows the song, even if they didn't know that we covered it yet.
Right.
So that's like another banger that's like a must. It's like another hit already just because people know it.
That is kind of a lost art. The band or the artist that would service these other songs and almost elevate the songs to another level, right? And I think it's important that some of these songs be rescued in a way from the discount bins of history.
The Where Are They Now file. I love covers. I mean, I've been in a million cover bands. Covers are just fun for me. Like, I love the ones that change it, you know, the Joe Cockers that do their own style. But I also love just, like, you know, when Faith No More does Easy and they do it basically straight, you know, and just, like, fun. 80s covers are just, I love 80s covers. I could do that all day long, you know?
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I. A full commitment's what I'm thinking of. You wouldn't get this from any other guy.
Can't Get Enough of You, Baby. My wife was mentioning that song is like just one of those things that was always in one of your playlists or one of your mixtapes.
It's a cover, too.
Yeah, it's
and
like...
The funny thing about that song, which I didn't
classic.
Know... It, well, it's a cover of Q and the Mysterians, question mark and the Mysterians, which I always thought it was because that's the kind of version they do. But what I didn't realize is that the Four Seasons did it originally.
Huh.
It's a Frankie Valli song, and they also didn't write it. So it's like a cover of a cover of a cover of a cover.
Let's ask the internet who wrote it.
I just looked it up the other day, and I can't remember...
Is it Burt Bacharach? When you put it in, Smash Mouth comes up first, see?
Yeah.
Danny Rendell and Sandy Linzer recorded first by the Four Seasons.
Sandy Linzer.
Yeah, I wonder what was
But a lot of people don't know that's a cover.
Yeah.
That's one of those songs that's just like, it's definitely taken a life of its own with Smash Mouth for sure. We usually open the show with it. Just come out swinging.
I can't get enough of you, baby.
Yeah, Sandy Linzer wrote some classics. Working my way back to you.
Oh, that's the best one. That's the Four Seasons too.
So, how does one
get into Smash Mouth?
This job? Obviously, we know a little bit. You know, it was in the public eye, which was a bit, you know, ugly. How?
Yeah.
The band shakeup happened. We all went a little crazy in 2020. Steve Harwell had a bit of a volatility factor,
uh-huh.
It seems.
So I hear.
It's hard for people to associate the band without him. And yet, you've sort of filled in pretty seamlessly, it seems.
Surprisingly, yeah. It has been really well received. To be honest, I really expected a lot more pushback from the fans, and they've been just awesome. I think maybe part of it is because, you know, I'm a 6-foot dude with tattoos, and I'm, you know, I like if you're squinting your eyes in the back row, maybe people might not know there's a new singer, you know, maybe half the crowd doesn't even know. I don't know. But I've had tons and tons of interaction with, you know, the fans, obviously the last year. And I mean, there's always the random comment of, you know, the one person who's like, Steve, you know, they make the one comment on the YouTube video, Steve. I'm like, okay, there's always that guy. But I expected a lot of those guys. And people have been just super sweet. They seem to like what I'm doing. To answer your question, how do I get the gig? I just auditioned. You know, I saw an ad. And I was, you know, I've been in bands for years and years and years, and I was doing other stuff, and I was just kind of saw the ad looking for a singer, and I was like, hey, give it a shot. And they, you know, they probably won't even respond. And so I just wrote them a little email and sent them a link to my YouTube, and they responded pretty quickly. And they're just like, yeah, this is great. Can you send an audition of, you know, singing all Walking on the Sun? And I did that, and they liked that. And so I did All Star and kind of progressed from there, and then went to San Jose and met the guys to see if we clicked. And it turns out that we actually have a lot in common. You know, a lot of similar influences with the punk scene and new wave and, well, you know, Devo and Pixies and, you know, all these bands that we have in common that we're influenced by. So we kind of vibed on like a, just like a bro level. I jammed with Paul a little bit, the bass player, and then kind of went to the next round of auditions, and it went to the final four. And I went up there and did like six songs with them, and it went great. And, then got the call and they offered me the gig, and, kind of just progressed from there. I kind of had a couple months to, we had a few practices, not many, like we practiced twice, basically two, like 3 days blocks twice. And it was all, cause those guys are all pros. I mean, when they're not in Smash Mouth, they're doing session work, they're touring with other people. They're, mm-hmm. those guys are busy and they're all, you know, 20, 30 year veterans. So I just stepped in and I just did my homework and I just practiced, you know, every day. I sang the set by myself in my studio, you know, on a microphone through the PA, cranked loud, pretending I was playing a show, and did that for like a month, you know, 30 songs. So I had it down when I got there. Cause I'm good at like, I have kind of a theater background. So I grew up, you know, reading scripts and memorizing lines and monologues and doing plays and musicals. And then I do a lot of like voiceover work for commercials. So it's like, I'm used to reading copy and, things like that. So I just kind of clicked. It was hard, but it was, you know, I know I have a process. And, yeah, by the time our first gig came around, like almost a year ago now, it was, the first gig was Guadalajara, Mexico, at the Corona Capital Festival. And it was like, I don't know, 30, 40, 50,000 people.
No, for sure.
And I just walked out on stage and, you know, it went great. It was, you know, I was stone cold sober and 50,000 people and come out with Can't Get Enough of You, Baby. That was my first time ever singing with in-ears. So that was, you know, ultimate, that was cool. And it was great. Yeah, people got amazing footage of that show. You could look it up on YouTube. But there's some guy, this guy had this drone and he got this amazing drone footage of just like.
How many people you think their debut show is that many people? That's like pretty impossible.
I don't know. But it's like almost, it's just like everyone's like, were you nervous? Were you nervous? And I'm like, no, I wasn't nervous. Like, I've been waiting 30 years for this. I've been preparing if I was ready for, yeah. Like, this is what we do, right? I mean, it's like the bigger the crowd, the better, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's almost harder to play an acoustic, yes. set in like, you know, McCabe's Guitar Shop or something, you know, and have like your mom looking at you, you know, as opposed to 50,000 Mexican super fans, you know, singing every word. So it was great. It was like, I just fit right in, and it was like, people loved it. Like, it was so much fun. So yeah, it was, I don't know how many other people have done that. Maybe like, you know, Van Halen or AC/DC, like major bands that replace their singers. I don't know, but.
Didn't that guy replace the dude in Journey who's like from the Philippines or something?
Arnell. Yeah. He's amazing. He's great. I don't know what his first show was, but, yeah. But they had another Steve. After Steve Perry left, they had the other Steve for a couple of years. So he was, I think, the third singer. But that was actually one of my motivations, because I saw them play with the new singer at the Hollywood Bowl a couple of years ago. I'd never seen Journey before. I'm not like a super fan, but I, you know, the hits are guilty pleasures, whatever. They're, you know, classic bands. And they were amazing. He was like, put on a great show. He sounded incredible. The fans loved him. And then I watched that documentary you know, they have lots of new fans because the whole Filipino Asian contingent, like, they gained all this whole new fan base. And so that was kind of like my motivation. I'm like, you know what? People love Steve Perry, but a lot of people like Arnell too.
Well, know? The songs eventually have a life of their own.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
They are bigger than you. They're 100%. Bigger than the band. They are sort of entities of the human spirit or something.
Well, we're seeing, yeah. that now with all these bands who are down to one or two original members or no original members.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, I mean, honestly, a band like Smash Mouth or Journey or whoever could replace all their members and tour forever because the songs do have a life of their own. You know, I mean, look at bands that you never, like, you know, Sublime. You're like, that's, Bradley was Sublime, but they replaced him and people love him, you know? Stone Temple Pilots are out there. Alice in Chains are out there. You know, all these bands have done it successfully. So yeah, the songs just continue to live on, and new generations of people just keep showing up and and just being, you know, they weren't alive or they didn't have the chance to see them or haven't seen them for years. So to experience that live is, you know, it happens every weekend. We play somewhere new and people are there. They show up.
Maybe later when my daughter gets home from daycare, I'll play the Smash Mouth cover of I Want to Be Like You from Jungle Book. One of my favorites from the Disney catalog.
Wait, I need to learn
There's
that
this list of covers that Smash Mouth did at one point. It's pretty long.
I haven't seen it. What, read a couple of them.
There's Under Pressure.
I've
House of Pain's Jump Around.
That's been in the discussion lately to do as an encore, so we'll probably bring that one back.
You make a good point about, I think, having a theater background, which I also do, because I think people don't realize, like, that part of your brain that is just storing all this data.
Yeah.
You know, because there's probably 100 songs that we could sing at any one point, but you're not, like, sitting there at home writing it down or being like, okay, I have to memorize this. It's like this muscle memory that keeps it, this sponge. Yeah. But at a certain point, you do have to learn all this stuff. Yeah. You had to learn it on a fast track basis, which is hard. But yeah, like when I used to be in like Shakespeare shows in college, which I loved, I had this little basement studio that my dad had for his voiceover work, because my dad's a voiceover guy. And I would record my cues onto like the cassette recorder in his little studio with the timing of like the gap that I would then speak back to myself.
Yep.
And then I would walk around with my, you know, Walkman.
Yeah.
And, you know, be doing Titus Andronicus, you know, walking down the street.
I would do that stuff too, man. I started in I hadn't done theater in years, like since high school. And about 10 years ago, my friend who runs a theater company in Provincetown, where I grew up in this really artistic community in Cape Cod and New York City back and forth. But she asked if I wanted to be in Rent, the play Rent. And I didn't know anything about Rent at all. I just for some reason, just kind of that whole phenomenon kind of passed me by. So I looked it up and I'm like, oh, it's about an aging rock star who wants to have like one more hit before he dies. I'm like, that sounds like it's right up my alley. So I happened to be in Hong Kong for 3 weeks and I learned the entire play back to front by myself. I just studied it nonstop. It was Roger, the lead, you know, one of the lead, the co-lead. So I learned the whole play, and then we went and we did the play, and we had a week of rehearsals in New York, and it was all like SAG actors, like pros, like just talented people. And then we did the play in Provincetown, and it was the first time I had done theater in maybe 20 years, and it was like, you know, that feeling right before the curtain goes up. It's like nervous but stoked that you prepared and you know your shit, and it's like then you pull it off and it goes great, and you're just like, that was the boat. That's the feeling I had before the curtain opened in Guadalajara for the first Smash Mouth show. It's like healthy nerves, because you know you're prepared. You know?
Everyone has, you know, who's done theater or, you know, any sort of acting has those actor's nightmare, dreams. I haven't done probably a full scripted show in over 10 years. I still have those dreams.
I never
have the dreams about singing, which is interesting.
Singing in your band?
Like, I never have the, like, oh, God, I don't remember the lyrics.
Right. I've had a couple of those.
You know?
But it's understandable because the situation I'm in now is, like, I had to learn a bunch of stuff suddenly in the last year. But, yeah, we've all had that dream. I mean, that's just the worst. Not being prepared is the worst feeling.
I feel like, in a way, if you've done a monologue from Edward Albee's Zoo Story, which I did, which is 10 pages.
I don't know that one, but he's a...
The dog speech, that's probably my all-time favorite play. I did that in high school. I learned 10 pages of a monologue, right? And you're like, if you can learn that, three verses and a chorus two, not that bad.
Yeah, Walking on the Sun isn't that hard compared to...
But there's times... Do you still get nervous every now and again? Like, do you have any stage fright?
For this band?
Yeah.
I honestly don't. I look forward to it, which is really weird because when I was doing this sort of like... I was doing like some tribute bands here and there... before Smash Mouth, like just to kind of like, you know, extra money, extra fun. I was doing a yacht rock thing. I was doing an 80s thing. And I would get nervous for those shows because there was, you know, first of all, you're singing two or three sets, which is, you know, when you're a rock musician, you're used to playing for 45 minutes or an hour. But to play for 2 hours is, you know, that's the only thing that I would get nervous about, like just to make sure my voice held up. And I, knock on wood, haven't had any issues. But yeah, things like, because the yacht rock thing is like you have to sing Hall & Oates and Journey and Steely Dan. And some of that stuff is, the range is high and technically complicated. So I would get a little nervous during that, but only right before the first song. Once you're playing, it's like you fit right in. It's fine. And you find that most people are there rooting for you. You know what I mean? People aren't looking to see you fail. You know, they want to see you do well.
And then I saw your face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace. A doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer.
Well, there he goes, Zach Goody, the brand new frontman of Smash Mouth. Yeah, I can't imagine having my first ever show with a band being in front of 40, 50, 60,000 people in Mexico. You're hearing actually a little bit of that concert right now. Them doing the Monkees cover, I'm a Believer, from the Corona Capital, Guadalajara, Mexico. It's nuts. You got to check out this video on YouTube. And, you know, Zach is living a dream that maybe he didn't even realize that he had. But he is out there every night in front of tens of thousands of folks. And he's singing his heart out. Now, say what you want about the group Smash Mouth. They have songs that go into your eardrums and start to destroy your brain a little bit. But that's kind of what great music does. Maybe it's not beloved or respected in its own time, but if you listen to Astro Lounge, man, there are some truly great songs, both instrumentally, lyrically, and sonically, that I think should be reappreciated and loved a whole lot more. We're going to come back next week and talk to Zach about his upbringing, how he got into music, and his journey into this bizarre situation where he goes out, as you're hearing, in front of 50,000 fans and sings Smash Mouth as his job. And as always, the show on the road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Z Lupitin, and we are part of the Osiris Podcast Network. We have some cool episodes coming up in the following weeks, including my talk with German pop icons Milky Chance. And also, I just talked today with Bill Payne of Little Feat, the amazing group from the 70s and 80s that put out a lot of the music that inspired me and my band Dust Bowl Revival today. And Dust Bowl Revival will be heading to Europe. Yes, we're playing the UK and Denmark in August, and then playing Rhode Island, and then up in Northern California at the end of September. So check it out, dustbowlrevival.com. Stay safe, stay creative, and we'll see you on the train.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.